And now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
You know, I think your brain produces a chemical that blocks out my voice.
What?
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Santa Barbara and Ventura Counties. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is taking command. All of my guests are discussing how to take command, whether it's in one's life, one's business, or in geopolitics. My next guest is an expert in geopolitics, war, and the Middle East, often forecasting coming events in the Middle East, including the relationships between Washington and Jerusalem. We'll discuss President Barack Obama's call for Israel to return to the 1967 border as a basis for peace negotiations. And if you feel strongly about this or if you want to call in, our telephone number is 639-0008. Gail Winston is the co-founder of the Winston International Institute for the Study of Prejudice. She and her husband organized a four-day international congress in Jerusalem on prejudice, discrimination, and conflict with 100 participating scientists from all over the world. Gail's husband has been an international trustee at the Jaffe Center for Strategic Studies in Tel Aviv University for 12 years and has been a member of the International Board of Governors for the Wiseman Institute of Science for the past 25 years. Welcome to the show, Gail. How are you doing today?
Thanks. Very well, thank you.
Well, thank you for joining us. I love to talk to thought leaders, and you are definitely a thought leader when it comes to the Middle East and what's going on there. So as a starting point, to describe President Barack Obama's foreign policy when it comes to the Middle East, how would you describe it? I mean, we've got the escalating war in Afghanistan, limited involvement in Egypt's revolution, limited involvement and then abdication of authority in Libya's revolution, no involvement in Iran's politics, and assassinating Osama bin Laden. What sort of picture is this painting for President Obama's foreign policy?
I don't want to outwardly criticize our American president, but I'm sure you've heard that phrase used before. He is giving... In the last week, he has been giving a very biased and anti-Israel point of view. Now, that wouldn't bother me so much, except he's basing what Israel is supposed to do in order to make peace in the world. He is saying that if we want to have peace in the whole Middle East, Israel has to give up her holy land. This is not even-handed. This is not being an honest broker. And this is not going to make peace because Israel won't be able to do what he's demanding. If Israel does give up this land, she will be at risk of being attacked. That's what those lines, or what he calls and what most of the media is calling borders, mean. The mistake is that the lines were armistice lines at the end of the war in 1948. They became very vulnerable for the little new state of Israel, who was surrounded by hostile neighbors. And as a result, the three Arab armies attacked in 1967. Therefore, after 67, when Israel gained back the whole west of the Jordan River, the world said, well, Israel can't do that because she has to give back these lands. And that these lines, these armistice lines, are now considered international borders. That's not true. It's not true legally, politically, logistically, philosophically, any way you want to look at it. They were armistice lines, and they were what caused the 67 war in the first place. All and right. If Israel was forced to go back to those lines, she would be at risk of being attacked again, because that's what the Arabs and the Muslims say they will do. They're not hiding their intentions. They say that they will replace Israel. Their maps show this. Since Arafat and with Abbas, they both all have shown their maps of Palestine, of their state of Palestine that they claim that they want, shows that Palestine covers all of what Israel is, from Jordan River all the way to the Mediterranean Sea. They're not hiding it. They're very open. But when President Barack says, well, you have to make painful concessions for peace, and if you don't make this peace, then the whole rest of the Middle East will be at war, and Israel, therefore, is the fault and the cause of this ongoing war, this uprising of all of the people who are objecting to the despots that are ruling them in the rest of the Middle East.
Well, so many questions, Gail. We're talking to Gail Winston. There's so many questions that come out of that answer that I want to ask you about. But let's zero in what you ended with there about the real crux of the matter is Israel is the cause of all the tension in the Middle East. Doesn't that seem a bit naive on the part of President Obama and Secretary of State Hillary Clinton?
That
would be it. I mean, we have got not only Israel there, but we do have the uprising in Libya. We had the uprising in Egypt. These are things that are unrelated to Israel, are they not?
Absolutely. That's why I said it, because it's so ridiculous.
Okay, so we would agree.
I don't hold by that. It just shows how ridiculous it is that Israel's the cause of all that uprising.
All right. So
actually, in one small way, you could look at it in one interesting way and say, well, Israel gives an example as the only state in the whole Middle East that's democratic and free. Therefore, its example sets a precedent for all of the people who live under despotic rulers to want to rise up. In that sense, Israel might have some inspiration for the people who are rising up against their totalitarian leaders.
All right, and that's an interesting point. And you can also say that Palestinians living underneath Israeli rule have it pretty much better off than their brethren in some of these other states across the northern Africa. But I want to drill.
Absolutely right.
I want to drill down on something else that you talked about, and that is the 1948 armistice lines that we're talking about as the basis of the 1967 war that Israel fought. And now, you know, here it is: the 1967 borders. That's what. Israel wants to protect. They need that to protect themselves.
Wait. Let's try to get people to not use the word borders.
All right.
It's, everyone falls into that. I do too. But if we go back to armistice lines and get away from borders, then they're no longer considered a legal border or boundary, a real thing.
All right. We'll use armistice lines. But the 1967 war was fought over these armistice lines.
Yeah.
Now, back then, there were three armies that were rising up against Israel. But since the 44 years that have intervened since 1967, the nature of warfare has changed in that time. In fact, there's been a bigger change in warfare as there was between the American Civil War and World War I in terms of the way that wars are fought.
Or
World War I and World War II, although those were more similar. No foreign government right now is directly threatening Israel's borders. What you've got is Hamas, and that Hamas, as far as I know, and correct me if I'm wrong here, does not have jet planes or tanks as the Egyptian army did in 1967. They are based much more on terror. So why are the armistice lines that important if the warfare is going to be based on terror war versus tanks and planes and invading troops?
Well, there's two things here. First of all, there's the power of whatever weapons are available. Hamas has, courtesy of Iran through Syria and through Egypt, has tremendous stocks of very strong missiles. They don't need planes. They can send a missile and it can hit Tel Aviv. They are reaching very close to Tel Aviv with the Iranian missiles that they do have, the Grad, G-R-A-D. They don't need, Hezbollah doesn't need planes and tanks. They may have them. They may get them later. But right now they have some 50,000 various kinds of missiles, rockets, and bombs that they have restocked after the 2006 Lebanon War. So they don't. The nature of war has changed so much. The missiles are so much stronger. They don't need the planes and tanks, number one. Number two, the more important thing is, what is the land really? Can Israel give land for peace? Well, maybe the question should be, why should Israel give land for peace? Why shouldn't Israel give peace for peace? The Arabs won't accept the land for peace anyway, by the way. They say that it doesn't matter what Israel gives them, they're still going to continue to fight Israel for the rest of it. And I don't understand why we don't listen to them. Why don't we respect the Arab Muslim world enough to listen to what they're saying? Because they mean it.
Well, now, that's interesting. So I would agree with you that the Arabs themselves are looking to eradicate Israel as a state. It has nothing to do with the physical land that they occupy. So why hasn't President Barack Obama really checked on his advisors? How's he lost sight of the fact of these armistice lines and why they were developed in the first place? I mean, aren't there military and political advisors giving him the historical perspective he needs?
From what he's saying, I guess not. But he could check back with the Joint Chiefs of Staff from 1967 when President Johnson asked the Joint Chiefs to do a study, a secret study. It was kept secret until it appeared in the Wall Street Journal in 1983. But in June 29, 1967, the U.S. Joint Chiefs of Staff, under then-General Earl Wheeler, wrote a memorandum that said that Israel must keep certain... The question was, what minimum territory should Israel retain for effective defense against conventional Arab attacks and terrorist raids? I'm quoting, by the way. The Joint Chiefs said, returning Israel to pre-67 boundaries, see, they use that word too, would drastically increase its vulnerability. Israel would be threatened by West Bank artillery and tactical SAMs, that's surface-to-air missiles.
Yes.
A sword constantly over its head and the need to maintain readiness with prohibitive mobilization costs. For stable future Arab-Israeli agreements, Israel must feel it can wait out a crisis. Rather than to strike preemptively, Israel should retain, now listen to this, the Gaza Strip, the mountains and plateaus of the West Bank, the tip of the Sinai, Sharm el-Sheikh, the Golan Heights east of Quneitra, and all of Jerusalem. Now, four of those were negotiated away so far. Maybe one more. Yeah, the Gaza Strip. And yet, it's never enough. I mean, Israel moved 10,000, evacuated 10,000 Jewish men, women, and children from their homes in Gush Katif in the Gaza Strip. And until then, the only places that were in danger inside of Israel were the Jews living in the Gaza Strip being attacked by Gazans who wanted, Gazan Arabs who wanted to attack Jews. Then once the Israelis were forced out, their homes were destroyed and the Arabs burned their synagogues and tore down the greenhouses that had been left for them to use to make a business of their own so that they could make some profitable, good agriculture, which is what the Gush Katif pioneers had been doing. Once all that was done, it turned into Hamastan. It turned into a territory of total terror that 10,000 rockets, missiles, and bombs were sent into Israel over a course of several years, 5 years, before Israel struck back.
All right. We're talking to Gail Winston, and we're talking about President Obama's proposal to Israel to return to the 1967 armistice lines and what that might mean, not only in Israel, but for the world and for Middle East peace. Let me ask you this, Gail. What are our allies saying, Israel notwithstanding, about this? I mean, President Obama is in Great Britain today. What do you think that the British think? After all, it was the British who actually lost the Battle of Palestine in 1948 that gave Israel its sovereignty.
Good point. And they've never quite gotten over it. I don't know. I think that the current prime minister is more of a friend to Israel than some past prime ministers have been, if you go back. But and I think that, however, oh, yeah, this is the point. They belong to something called the European Union, most of the countries in Europe. And the European Union came out against Israel short term.
Well, now, Gail, just in the interest of fairness and in clarity, Great Britain does not belong to the European Union. The EU is separate from Great Britain, so they don't tie themselves to the policies of the EU.
That's true, but at times they've been very, I don't know, I think their feelings got hurt when they got a little kicked out of what was the Palestinian Mandate. Now, that's something we forget. It was called the Palestinian Mandate because the League of Nations and the San Remo Conference of 1920 had written a legal document making the whole Palestinian mandate, including Jordan, what's now Jordan, to be developed into a homeland for the Jews so that the Jews could go back to their ancient homeland where all their historical sites are. By the way, most of these sites are in what's called the West Bank. It's called the West Bank because it's on the west side of the Jordan River. That's the only reason.
Right.
And yet, this is the part that many, too many pundits and too many leaders of different countries are saying, oh, well, if Israel just gives up this West Bank because Jordan occupied it for 19 years, and therefore it becomes the property of the Jordanians or of the Palestinians, because Jordan is 80% Palestinian. Oh, what does that mean? It means that there actually is another Palestinian state, and that's the current Kingdom of Jordan. In fact, there's going to be something put before Congress to declare that in the near future.
And we want to take a look at that. We're talking to Gail Winston, everybody. We're talking about the situation in the Middle East and Barack Obama's proposal for peace in that region. And let me ask you and bring it home to the United States, if we can, Gail, in sure. the minute or so we've got left. The presidential election of 2012 is approaching. What's the impact of this foreign policy decision going to have on Barack Obama's chances for re-election? I mean, will this impact the decision on having, how will this impact the Jewish voters? And will any loss of Jewish voters be offset by moderate and independent voters who may decide to like this particular foreign policy decision?
Barack Obama is a great performer. When he speaks, even people who disagree with him find it appealing because he's such a good speaker. However, what he's saying is horrific. It means the end of Israel. Now, 80%, 70% or 80% of the American Jews voted for Barack Obama in the last election.
That's right.
I think there's some, excuse the expression, voters' remorse. I think that they see now what he really intends. The first thing he did when he was elected was to bow to, not the first thing, but one of the first things he did was to reach out to the Muslim world, to bow to Saudi Arabia, to reach out to Iran. And he is ignoring the fact that Muslims are inundating a lot of Europe and coming into many, many American cities. Muslims are not necessarily a warlike people. However, there are 1.5 billion Muslims in the world. When a group reaches critical mass, then say a 5% of that critical mass can become warlike and or terroristic and attack the very host country that they're in. There's some places in Europe, in Muslim neighborhoods, that police are afraid to go to, also in American cities. So we are at risk here from being pushed to accept their very strict Islamic law called Sharia law and to make it part of our financial foundation and to accede to all of their demands. This is dangerous to America. To endanger Israel itself is very dangerous to America because Israel is the only base that's democratic and is America's true ally in the Middle East. Someone, I think it was Rudy Boshewitz, called Israel America's aircraft carrier in the Middle East.
Well,
never moving, was always there to help, and Israel has helped America. Everything that Israel has received from America, she's given back hundredfold. She's invented weapons and medicine and ideas and redone certain American technology and initiated her own technology that's benefited the world and America. If Israel's endangered by these policies, then the whole world suffers. And America does, too. What will the people do about Barack Obama in 2012? I don't know. But it's up to the people of America who are very, very strongly in favor of keeping a strong Israel. They really understand it. They understand Israel's traditions
I like what you say, Gail. I like what you say, Gail, that the voters will have to take care of it. We've been talking to Gail Winston, and we'll have to have you back to Gail to debate this some more. We've been talking about President Barack Obama's proposal that Israel return to the 1967 armistice lines. Gail, it has been a pleasure. We'll talk to you down the road.
Thanks. Please do. I enjoyed it. Thanks, Bill.